Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Former President Donald Trump delivered a veiled jab at his protege in the Florida governor's office this week. Lawmakers kicked off the state's 60-day legislative session, and Governor DeSantis endorsed a ban on abortions after 15 weeks. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. And welcome to the first Inside Florida Politics podcast of 2022. It's going to be a busy election year, and we have lots to talk about to kick things off. But first, that music means it's time for some numbers. Gentlemen, it's a new year. What new numbers do you have you unearthed for us in 2022? John, how about you?
Zach, I do have a New Year's number, and decimals are back. My number this week is 3.8.
All right. How about you, Antonio?
I have an old year number, 500,000.
And my number is 72 million. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, 2022 is kicking off with some tension at the highest levels of the GOP ranks. Trump gave a television interview this week where he called politicians who won't answer definitively whether they've received the COVID vaccine booster shot, quote, gutless. That comment was widely viewed as a jab at DeSantis, who hedged on whether he received the booster shot during a television interview a few weeks ago. There are reports that Trump doesn't feel DeSantis has been deferential enough to him in the early maneuvering ahead of the 2024 presidential election. DeSantis is getting a lot of presidential buzz, and Trump, who has hinted that he plans to run in 2024, seems unhappy with how DeSantis is handling the 2024 speculation. Antonio, does this spell trouble for DeSantis going forward?
Actually, Zach, I think it's kind of a sign of trouble for Trump, politically and brand-wise. But look, I get why, at least at the surface, this looks like a problematic thing for DeSantis. You know, it's DeSantis who's up for re-election, and he needs a Trump base solidly behind him. So any perceptions of a rift with his political godfather, and let's not forget that it was Trump who paved the path for DeSantis to be governor of Florida. So any kind of rift with Trump is not in DeSantis's best interest. So, but still, I'm hearing a little bit of a different perspective on this, and it goes back to the fact that, you know, Trump's recent touting of the vaccine is all political gamesmanship. He rarely mentioned the vaccine throughout the bulk of 2021. So why is he making a big deal of it now? Well, because the Omicron variant has thrown a curveball at the Biden administration, and the president's approval rating has dropped precipitously. And Trump smells blood in the water, particularly on an issue that was that Biden was really strong on to start 2021. So obviously, Trump is going to go after Biden in part by attacking the vaccine rollout. Unfortunately, this has kind of boomeranged a bit against Trump, because there are many people in his base that are rejecting the vaccine and, in fact, rejecting COVID protective measures in general. In fact, when Trump tried to play this line at his recent appearances with Bill O'Reilly, he got booed. Same thing happened at a rally, I think, back in Alabama earlier in 2021, where he mentioned getting the vaccine and got booed and eventually pivoted to, no, I'm not in favor of vaccine mandates, just a vaccine, and then got booed again. So getting booed by an audience, and particularly one that paid money to see him, is a terrible look for Trump. So basically what seems to have happened here, I'm told, is that Trump dove into the deep end of the vaccine pool, found the water deeper than he thought it would be, and is now asking the so-called gutless politicians to jump in with him, and they're saying, no thanks. So while Trump is the kingmaker in the GOP, there are also signs of his limitations of his power. You know, I read all his emails, and a theme for much of the latter part of last year was an effort to have Senate Republicans oust Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who Trump had repeatedly derides as a broken old crow. Yet there has been no effort to oust McConnell, broken old crow or not. And this week, when the U.S. Senator from, I think Mark Rounds from South Dakota, Republican, said there was an election fraud in 2020, Trump attacked him, only to see other top GOP Senate GOPers defend Rounds. So the other problem, so that kind of points to one area of weakness for Trump. And the other problem, and the potentially bigger problem in Florida, is that DeSantis's political brand continues to brighten. Yes, Trump is the founding father of Trumpism, but DeSantis is arguably the founding father of the free state brand. And that is a fresh political message that is getting measurably more popular. One example, I watched a good bit of the Florida Chamber of Commerce's Legislative Priorities Summit this week, and that free state messaging was woven into almost all the presentations. That said, there is no question Trump is the most popular Republican out there, But I am hearing more and more people embrace DeSantis' message because it's new, speaks to the times we live in, and doesn't have the baggage that Trump has. And also, look, it has youth. By the time 2024 rolls around, Trump will be 77. Rivals will make a case of his age, just as Trump has made an issue of Biden's age. DeSantis, on the other hand, will be a very youthful 45 years old. So, you know, Zach, we can debate it, but the gutless politician slap may speak more to an area of weakness for Trump than DeSantis.
Interesting. So maybe a little vaccine insecurity here for Trump, and how he's kind of he wants to take credit for this vaccine, right? But he isn't really getting a warm embrace from the base when it comes to topping this thing. So I guess maybe he wants some others to join him in doing it. Well, while Trump was slamming him this week, DeSantis was helping the legislature kick off its annual 60-day legislative session. The governor delivered the annual State of the State speech, repeating themes he has been hammering on for months, as Antonio mentioned, the whole free state of Florida spiel and resisting COVID public health mandates. John, the governor is very popular in the GOP right now. How deferential do you think lawmakers will be to his agenda? And what else should we be looking for as the session kicks off?
Well, Zach, Republicans who hold big majorities in the state House and Senate they're really not just supporters of the governor. They are supplicants to him. They feel completely in his power. So there's no doubt they're going to be supportive of everything that he's proposed. Democrats aren't, but they are vastly outnumbered in Tallahassee and can't really stop anything. But the Republican majority clearly has no interest in exerting its independence or distancing itself from the governor as a separate and equal branch of government. But in fact, with the exception of one Republican, State Senator Jeff Brandis, he's a St. Petersburg Republican who defied DeSantis last year by voting against some of his high priorities. Then Brandis lost his chairmanship of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Well, everyone else is standing by the governor, ready to do his bidding this year. He'll get everything he wants from the legislature. Will there be divisions? I suppose heading into an election year when redistricting is on the minds of many who will be running in redrawn districts, being a complete loyalist to the governor is kind of considered a campaign plus. A lot of voters may not know their individual lawmaker, especially if it's a Republican running. But if that Republican running is allied with the governor, who is a much more high profile figure, that Republican probably has a good chance of winning, even if, the voters aren't completely sure or aware of who he is. But we're seeing in Tallahassee what is happening with Republicans on the national scale with their fear of former President Trump. Here there is an unswerving adherence to DeSantis. So the only stumbles could be in a couple of ways, his priorities are shaped or maybe downsized a bit. We've seen it earlier with DeSantis. Last year he pushed election law changes, a law enforcement measure that was sort of a conservative answer to the Black Lives Matter movement. He pushed legislation that regulated Facebook and banned transgender girls from playing high school and college sports. And the Republican majority just marched to his drumbeat. This year, we're seeing him advancing a new 52-person investigative force to track elections crimes that most basically say don't exist. There is not a flurry of election crimes going on out in Florida, but this is a little bit of a response to the whole election fraud scandal that Trump continues to put a lot of fuel into. DeSantis also wants to give people the right to sue if critical race theory is taught in schools or in private workplaces. That's a culture war highlight that most Republicans also seem drawn to. The modern Republican Party seems to have devolved into reflexively following an autocratic leader, unwilling to challenge him. We've seen it with Trump, and that's where we are in state government now with DeSantis. What else is there to look for this session? Money is not going to be a problem in the state treasury, so that doesn't look to cause much friction, although there are the occasions where too much money can sometimes cause some competitiveness or rivalries. Redistricting could rile some Republicans and Democrats against each other, because you could have some circumstances where lawmakers, even within the same party, could be paired in the same district and facing each other in a primary, or maybe they become rivals for some higher office. But it's still a little too early to project that out. In an election year, I think legislators generally want to hold down the dramas. They're hoping to finish their work and get out of town and get ready for the campaign trail on the scheduled 60th and last day of the session. So we'll see if that exit strategy holds up in the next 2 months.
All right. Well, one bill that was filed on the very first day of the legislative session is a ban on abortions after 15 weeks. Current Florida law prohibits abortions when a fetus is viable outside the womb, which is generally around 24 weeks. So this bill would move up the cutoff point when an abortion is legal by 9 weeks. That's a big change, and it seems to have a good chance of advancing. The bill has support of House leadership, and DeSantis said this week that he supports the idea of a 15-week abortion ban. John, do you see any obstacles to this legislation right now?
Well, reducing the number of weeks that a legal abortion could be performed does seem to be the way that the legislature is looking to go this year. Of course, the U.S. Supreme Court is still to rule on a Mississippi law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks. I'm somewhat surprised that the Florida Republicans seem intent on moving ahead with this issue without that guidance from the Supreme Court, which is not expected to rule until June. The U.S. Supreme Court is a very conservative court now, and it seems that fellow conservatives in Florida are confident that justices will uphold the Mississippi law, or at least the most significant portions of it, including that reduction of the weeks that an abortion can take place. Florida currently bans abortion at 24 weeks, except in cases of endangering the health or life of a woman. But the early signs so far are that the Republican-controlled legislature is ready to move ahead with a 15-week law and hope that it is upheld by the court. It's hard to tell, though, if there are any reservations among these ruling Republicans about how this issue generally could be accepted in Florida, which, you know, on abortion, Florida doesn't quite match our more deep South neighbors, where religious opposition to abortion and the call to overturn Roe versus Wade has been, you know, much louder and more enduring through the years. Florida has not quite, you know, captured that fervor for getting rid of Roe versus Wade. Florida, I sense, is a little more tolerant on the state of the topic of abortion. And the state has a strong right of privacy, which in the past has been seen as a deterrent to Florida passing, you know, really profound restrictions on abortion access. State Rep. Anna Eskamani, who's a progressive Democrat from Orlando, she said that she thinks the debate over abortion could become one of the biggest political fights of the year, and maybe shape elections across the state in November. You know, that's when DeSantis will be on the ballot. But, you know, as you suggested leading into this topic, the leaders of the House and Senate and Governor DeSantis seem not concerned with any, you know, ambivalence from the Florida voting public or with waiting for that Supreme Court ruling. So they really want to take action this session. And it does look like what they're honing in on is that 15-week standard.
I agree, John, that there does seem some trepidation over the years in Florida overall, even among Republicans, about going too far in restricting abortions. But it seems to me that this 15 weeks, that they're going to position that bill as kind of like a compromise measure. I mean, the Texas abortion ban outlaws abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is like 6 weeks, I think. And some other states are, you know, I think are moving to pretty much outlaw abortions altogether or have basically de facto abortion bans completely. So I have a sense that they're going to kind of argue that 15 weeks is sort of, you know, not as extreme as some other places. And we'll see how that flies. But it was interesting to see it rolled out on the first day of session with the support from the House and DeSantis immediately get behind it. It seems like this is definitely going forward this year. We'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, it's 500,000, and I said it's an old year number because, gents, that is the average price of a single family home in Palm Beach County at the end of 2021, specifically $500,000. Now, that figure is $50,000 more than the average price of a single family home in the county when 2021 started. And that figure in early 2021 was 25% more than the average price of a single family home in early 2020 before the pandemic. That's just Palm Beach County, yeah, but home prices across Florida have been skyrocketing. And it's not just single family homes. It's also price tags on townhomes and condos. And with those prices spiraling, rents are shooting up as well. Why am I bringing this up? Because housing costs here and across the state are rising sharply, even at a much faster rate than wages and salaries. As such, this is becoming a big issue for Floridians. It's part of that inflation set of concerns, along with rising food prices and gasoline pump price shocks, which means it's also going to be an issue for the politicians seeking votes in this year's election. Because we can tout the booming Florida economy all day, but if you can't find an affordable place to live, all that growth somehow then becomes a negative. We've been hearing a lot about inflation and certainly also gasoline prices and so forth, but keep an eye on housing costs because that one is also a major impediment to sound and solid consumer sentiment. And to answering that key question, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Yeah, the housing issue is such a big one, and it's kind of insane what the median home value has gotten to at this point. It doesn't seem sustainable if you're going to continue to attract people that you need to power the workforce in this state. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my 3.8 is $3.8 billion, and that's the amount of American Rescue Plan federal money that is tucked into Governor Ron DeSantis's state budget proposal for the year ahead. Now, DeSantis is spending a big chunk of that $1.1 billion on a 25 cents a gallon gas tax reduction that he wants to give Florida motorists for 5 months beginning in July. But the rest of the money is spent on a host of things, a $550 million Resilient Florida grant plan that will help cities and counties deal with the infrastructure problems caused by climate change. And he's sprinkling $1,000 pay bonuses to teachers, law enforcement, and first responders. You know, in an election year, this kind of spending is generally good politics. You can get some politically active public employee groups behind you. You can say you're doing something to help the environment and the gas tax cut. That's going to still be giving back in November when people are driving to the polls. So this is the same Ron DeSantis who spent a large part of his State of the State address just on Tuesday. He was blasting the policies of President Biden over vaccines and masks and, reveling in his own work to keep Florida free, as he called it, using variations of the word free a dozen times in his speech. The American Rescue Plan, where the federal money comes from, also was voted against by every Republican member of Congress. But DeSantis looks like a political winner when he uses these dollars to spend them on a host of popular proposals. So Florida Democrats who, frankly, they don't hold out too much hope of stopping DeSantis from winning re-election. Well, they're frustrated by the dollar dilemma they're facing here. You know, Washington gives, DeSantis bashes, then he spends Washington bucks. But in the early committee meetings at the state capitol, Democrats have been trying to remind people where the money comes from. But the old saying in politics is if you're explaining, you're losing. So even Democrats aren't too hopeful that Floridians are going to thank Joe Biden and not Ron DeSantis for that break at the gas pump.
Yeah, nobody seems eager to turn this money away at this point. Well, my number is 72 million. That's how much cash on hand Ron DeSantis has available to fund his reelection effort as he heads into 2022. Again, that's how much cash. That's not how much he's raised. He actually has 72 million in cash ready, and that's a massive amount of money, with the bulk of it raised through his Friends of Ron DeSantis committee. That committee, which can accept unlimited contribution, raised another $3.7 million in December. And DeSantis also began to ramp up small dollar fundraising through his personal campaign account, which pulled in $2.3 million in December, for a combined $6 million raised last month for the governor's reelection effort, which is far more than any of his Democratic opponents. DeSantis has built a fundraising juggernaut that continues to rake in huge checks. The largest contribution he received last month was $500,000 from the Republican Governors Association, but he received eight different six-figure checks, including from billionaire Thomas Petterfee, a Palm Beach billionaire. He kicked in another $100,000 to the governor's campaign. Those big money donors have really powered DeSantis's campaign so far. But one thing that will be interesting to watch is whether he can build the kind of small dollar fundraising operation that has really helped Trump and people like Bernie Sanders and others, really build some campaign juggernauts. Those small dollar contributions that poured into the governor's official campaign account last month are a sign that he might be starting to build such an operation, which should help him in, not just in 2022, but potentially beyond. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.